What is going on, everyone? Welcome to an emergency edition of the Avalanche Warning. The sirens went off, guys, today. Martin Natchez signed the ever-waiting extension that we've been waiting on for at least the beginning of the summer. This has been the thing that everybody's been kind of counting down the days for. It has finally happened. It was announced this morning. We'll kind of get into the bread and butter of it. This morning, 8 years by $11.5 million. I want to read off some career stats before we start getting into, you know, breaking this deal down, what it kind of looks like. This is for a guy who has not eclipsed more than 85 points in a career. Last season was a career high for him, earning 55 points in 49 games with the Carolina Hurricanes, and then 28 points in 30 games with the Colorado Avalanche following the trade. He has not scored more than 28 goals in a season. That came in the 2022-23 season with the Carolina Hurricanes, 71 points overall in that season. So far with the Colorado Avalanche, now though, he is sitting at 13 points in 11 games. This is a guy who's played 452 games in total in his career, a total of 339 points. I mean, I'll kind of set it up before throwing it over to you first, Gavin. This is, you know, a guy who's going to be playing next to Nathan MacKinnon, ideally, for the next 8 years, setting himself up nicely for a 100-plus point career in the near future. Guy who thinks a lot like a Nathan MacKinnon. If it walks like Nathan MacKinnon and talks like Nathan MacKinnon, it might not be. It might be Marty Natchez. That's kind of what this is looking like here for me anyway. I don't know, kind of setting it up. I don't mind this deal at all. It's maybe a little expensive for my tastes, but for what he has shown so far in the season, this seems like a number that could have gone up more depending on how the next 10-game, 20-game segment went. Just your thoughts first off before we throw it to Grant.
Yeah, I think when you look at this season, how many other contracts have gotten signed already, how they're already getting outrageous, and the fact that the cap is going up so exponentially that the contracts we've really gotten used to for the last 5 years on a flat cap didn't gradually erode. It just fell out all at once. So we kind of have to, on the fly, re-temper our expectations for what contracts are. Mm-hmm. And when you look at this Natchez contract situation, you were kind of thinking, all right, like coming in in a vacuum, you'd be like, oh, maybe $9 million at max 10. You see the cap go up very exponentially. You see him also have the start that he has where Natchez just agent and his agent kind of refused to talk. They're like, no, we're going to see. We're going to wait. Just like everyone else did in this free agent class, quite frankly. A lot of the players that are currently around, you saw Kyle Connor, Jack Eichel. You're seeing Adrian Kempe hold out, which now that Natchez has signed, I guarantee you Kempe is going to sign pretty close now because Natchez should get less than Kyle Connor. Adrian Kempe should get less than Martin Natchez. So that's there was that trifecta. Kyle Connor was the first domino to fall. You're kind of looking at this like, all right, he makes probably about $500,000 too much. But if that's what it takes to pay a guy like that with the rising cap, with the Avalanche having a lot of money, Chris McFarland even said himself, like he asked ownership, like how much money can we have? And ownership said, like, as much as you want. Like there's a lot of speculation about the Avalanche being this like quiet internal cap team because the Kroenkes are sometimes a little bit stingy. This is hockey. This isn't the NFL. This isn't the NBA. Like I think Nikola Jokic or I'm pretty sure he makes the combined salary of the Colorado Avalanche. So when the Avs ask, can we have $2 million? They say, sure, buddy. Go have fun in the sandbox. in 30 years, when hopefully hockey has grown and it's way more of a sport that pays its players, maybe. But now we're quite a few ways away from that being a reality with the Avalanche. Honestly, all that to say, I'm happy with the Netchez contract. I'm happy it got done. Is it the money I wanted at the beginning of the summer? No. But is it the money that I expected now? Yes, absolutely. I'm not surprised at all. But yeah, what about your thoughts?
No, before I throw it over to Grant, I do want to point out something else McFarland said in the availability that I thought was kind of interesting, or at least addressed in the fact that this is one less top winger spot they have to worry about filling here in the next couple of years, where a lot of these guys are getting signed to longer term deals, and that market starts growing thinner and thinner as well. And this is a high end guy that you don't have to worry about losing in 8 years.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I agree.
I don't know. Yeah. Grant, I know you were a lot less positive about this contract than we are, though. Go ahead. And
I mean, I prefer if Nate just never came to Colorado in the beginning.
All right. Here we go, guys.
I'm just going to put this as simple first, and then I'm going to go into why it's a terrible deal and why I think Natchez is a complete overpay and why the Avalanche will not win anything. And welcome to your new Colorado Avalanche, who have no playoff aspirations and get nobody who's clutching the playoffs. The simple fact is that Martin Natchez has never performed in the playoffs. You need people to perform in the playoffs, and you know what? He's not one of them. And if you're going to say, well, that's kind of a really weird thing to harp on. Am I crazy, or is this the same GM who told us all 7 or 8 months ago in February when he made the, or after he made the deal, where he was like, we need to be a deeper, fuller team. Oh, hey, we're going to overpay Brock Nelson. Thank you. Here's $7 million. Oh, hey, Martin Natchez, a guy who's completely unproven, never gotten 50 goals, never gotten 100 points in a season. We're going to give you 11 and a half because I don't know what a contract means anymore. I'm sorry. Were you the one who signed the really good McKinnon deal in 2017? Oh, you weren't. Were you the one who signed the really good McCarr deal in 2022? Oh, no, you weren't. Were you the same GM that signed the $7 million deal for Gabriel Landeskog? No, you were not. This is like, and I'm okay with the whole narrative of like, you know, you didn't want to pay $500,000 more dollars for Mikko Rantanen, but you're going to spend it on Natchez now that you have the cap going up. I'm fine with that. As long as you can admit to yourself that you were lying from the beginning and all you wanted was one extra center who honestly is probably going to be looking at somewhere between a $5 and $6 million deal, considering where the cap is about to go and considering every third liner wants more money, because they know their time is now and Jack Drury is still young. And then if we're going to add everything on top of it, and the biggest painstaking thing for me is Ghost. I think the only thing I've seen him do in a playoff run was when the Hurricanes played the injury-ridden Devils one of the very first years they were in the playoffs, and he actually had two moderately good games, and then I did not see him on the score sheet for the rest of the playoffs. And mind you, they went to the Eastern Conference Finals where he was a second line center. I don't like Martin Natchez. I don't. He's a good fit right now. Will he stay that way? Will he perform throughout the season? Will he perform when April comes? I don't know. But I'll tell you this, though, that $11.5 million looks really bad considering that Connor McDavid just signed for $12.75 and his clear focus was to win and your clear focus was to not help your team win. Thank you very much. Once again, Chris McFarland has exemplified how you are not able to get a team-friendly deal. You are only there to get deals for the players. You have no idea how to actually construct a team as a whole other than, oh, hey, Brent Burns, we see you're 41. Let's go add you in. Oh, Malinsky, an undrafted prospect. Let's go get you. Oh, hey, Soloviev, I saw you just hit waivers. We're going to need you for a couple games. Hey, Ashawn, you were playing really good. The two games that you showed up for. You're playing really good. Oh, hey, where are you going? You're going back down to the AHL. I could go on and on and on about this Chris McFarland guy. I honestly could. And just to save time here, because we don't want this to be too long, I'm just going to say I would rather have the Rockies general manager where I know he's going to be consistently terrible and I don't have to get my hopes up every year when the playoffs come around because he goes, we need to be a deeper team, but we're going to sign a guy for $11.5 million. We're going to be a deeper team. We're going to overpay a 32-year-old by $3 million and not get any kind of team discount. Oh, and also, we're about to re-sign Samuel Girard in 2 years because why? I don't know. Oh, hey, Cale Makar, we're going to have to give everything we have left to you after we've handled everybody else's contracts. Hey, can you do $15 million, please? Joke.
I want to touch on one thing here before kind of getting into more of this. Of all the dominoes that have fallen so far in free agency, Connor McDavid is one of the ones that I would be very, very hesitant to compare this to just because that is solely a win now kind of contract. This is
Are the Avalanche in a win now period?
Yeah.
I rest my case.
But you're not listening. You didn't let me finish. This is a Connor McDavid who is very, very unhappy with the results that have been provided to him thus far in his career. That contract, I think, was purely signed as a show me what you can give me in 2 years and we'll reevaluate what my role in is and what our role is as a contending team here in the future. That is what that deal is. And that's about as team friendly as you can get when you're in that kind of maybe smaller, larger, whatever they kind of view that window as. That's not very comparable. Second off, the priority here, and I asked Chris McFarland this solely for this reason, in saying, was an 8-year deal, what was this deal contingent on it being 8 years? And he said, no. This is a deal that they just wanted to get done regardless of what kind of term it kind of landed on. And honestly, if it were a 4 or 5 year, another sort of bridge deal, I could see it coming in at a lower AAV. I don't see him going above maybe a 10 for that, maybe a 10 and a half because it's lower term, but he's committing long-term. This is him committing and saying, yes, I love being here in Colorado. I've found my fit. I am playing better hockey as a result. And I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that those results show in the form of a Stanley Cup. It's something he said multiple times. And I think in order to have addressed that, there needs to be a certain understanding of these are the problem areas of his game. And I think that's something that's been addressed over the last couple of months. Yes, there are problem areas that need to be fixed, especially the, you know, stretch of games he goes every now and again during the season where he completely dips off of the score sheet. That is a problem. That is something I think he is going to be committed to fixing. That also extends to playoffs. And I think there's a certain understanding of, oh, okay, we're paying you X amount of money. Show me what that can amount to in the playoffs. And that seems like what Martin Natchez is committed to fixing is that that's the commitment. That's the expectation, right? Is that if he's not scoring every night, he's at least contributing to something and he's showing for it on the eye test, on the ice, and contributing to helping his team win night in, night out.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a hard situation because you've got so much mixed up here. You have all the misinformation about the Mikko Rantanen contract and people still thinking that he would have taken 12 in Colorado, which I thought we collectively agreed that that wasn't the case. And then there's a lot of stuff too, but honestly, the fact is the contract doesn't hurt the Avalanche at all. They're able to cruise in the next season completely fine. And the biggest problem with the Rantanen contract is it would have been too much this year specifically. Mm-hmm. That $14, $13 million that he wanted would have crippled the Avalanche this season. There is no Nelson who is on the up-and-up trend with him and Nichushkin looking like a great duo. So I don't know where it's coming from that Nelson isn't that good enough. I think you need to look at some underlying numbers there. Then you go and get into Victor Olofsson, the guy that has 10 points in 11 games, something we left out on the free agency acquisitions. Brett Burns has 5 assists through 11 games. Sam Molinsky has like 6 points. They've both been fantastic acquisitions. As much as I don't like Chris McFarland as a GM, I think when you look objectively, the two biggest things I was going to wonder about him was, what does this Netschish contract look like? Like, if Netschish gets traded again, that's a horrible look for a GM. Mm-hmm. And the second one is, obviously, what is Brock Nelson's play? He needs to be good. He's been doing a lot better. And that's the end of it. But you look at everyone else he's brought over his tenure, Ross Colton playing very well, Jack Drury looking like a fantastic third line center so far. It's a roster, it's a top nine that is legitimately one of the best 5-on-5 teams in the NHL. So when you look at this roster construction, none of that would have been possible if Mikko Rantanen got paid, because he's a selfish person and a selfish player that pissed off numerous organizations during his entire time. And the misdirection that somehow we could have paid him and then been okay next season. Well, congratulations. We have entirely one season of cup contention, because the season after that, Cale Makar's contract comes, which is the most important thing to realize about this, is Cale Makar has a huge influence on what is going on with this team and who we're handing out contracts to. Because if, say, we do have Mikko Rantanen at $13.5 million, that's the discount he was offering. Then, okay, you have that one good season, which is next season, the 26-27 season of contention. And then Kale Makar's contract just cripples you forever, and you no longer have a team after that. That's not possible. With this, you get younger with Martin Necas. You get several years younger. You get a young top six forward for years to come who has been on the up and up over and over again. His game is just continuing to rise. Who the narrative that he's not good in the playoffs, like, if you look at some actual numbers and you stop believing the near, like, Mitch Marner level of hatred that people have for this guy, he has 14 points in his last 18 games in the playoffs. Like, we're not talking about apocalyptic Nick Ehlers numbers. We're talking about decent numbers across a full playoff series. And in that last series against Dallas, Martin Necas was not even close to the only player that couldn't finish, including several guys all up and down the lineup, except Nathan MacKinnon. And that was about it.
You're talking about a playoff series where Logan O'Connor was one of your shining
stars. He was a hero in that series, and that was about it. Him and MacKinnon, the two best players in the entire league, apparently. But I think when you look at a deal like this, it's just going to be the reality. We knew it was the reality when Necas got traded here. I don't think how you can look at this deal and be like, now it's over. I'm like, this was always the plan. I don't know why this has been some, like, 8-month slow burn thing. This is the plan. And so far the results are much better than MacKinnon ever was with Rantanen, considering that both him and Rantanen were stale as a duo last season.
I mean, I don't agree. I mean, I can look at analytics and look at statistics and look at everything. I have one answer. I have one question for you. Who puts the puck in the back of the net more, Mikko in the playoffs, Mikko Rantanen or Martin Necas? And I'll give you a hint. Martin Necas has actually played more games in the playoffs than Mikko Rantanen has.
Yeah. I mean, it's no doubt that Mikko Rantanen is a good playoff performer in stretches. But there's also the fact of, where was Mikko Rantanen for the Oilers series or the rest of the Winnipeg Jets series for Dallas? And you want to pay that guy an absorbent amount of money who doesn't drive play consistently? I don't agree, but I also
asked the question of, where was Martin Necas in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Panthers round one? Where was he in the Eastern Conference Finals round two?
Where was Martin Necas with the Tampa Bay Lightning? He's been bad in the playoffs, but he's trending up. So that's the point I'm making is, yes, he's been bad in the beginning of his career, but throughout the maturity of it, you're seeing him on the rise. He's only 26 years old.
This you're also like a looking 43 at
43 year old player.
You're also looking at a situation here, Grant, where Gavin literally just addressed this and saying maybe Martin Necas didn't show up as much as we would have liked in this last playoff series, but neither did anybody else.
What's the point in giving him almost a million more than he probably is worth if he can't do the thing you traded him for?
Who cares? It's $1 million that has no impact on the team.
Then why was that $1 million because there's no way Frank Saravalli was right that they were off by 500K. They had to have been off by a larger number than that. If we're talking about $1 million not being that much, then where was that talk in the Mikko Rantanen contract?
Oh, because it was near $3 million. That's why. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Mikko Rantanen, what is reported as Mikko Rantanen being at 13 and the Avalanche being at 11.7.
That, yeah, if, by I don't my, buy that whatsoever. By the 11.7 has no basis in reality.
That's at least what I've seen. But I look at that and I go, well, that's 1.25 million. That is a Brent Burns. That has no effect on like a Victor Olsson. That barely has an effect when it comes to Brock Nelson, because you paid a 32-year-old $7 million when Jonathan Tavares signed for 1.56.
The thing that is getting lost in translation. Hold on.
I was not done. And you overpay.
You want to say that five more times?
You overpaid in your trades. You overpaid when you traded for Charlie Lindgren. You overpaid when you traded for Brock Nelson because you gave up the best prospect you had since Cale Makar and Callum Ritchie. You overpaid when you had to get rid of Casey Mittelstadt because you gave him a deal for $5 million after one good season in his entire history in the NHL, and that didn't work out. You overpaid with Brock Nelson at giving him $7 million when you saw Tavares sign 3 days later for $4.2 million. You could have at least got him for $5 million. Maybe that's $7 million. I don't see the vision here with this GM of, I don't care. You're going to overpay guys you haven't seen play for over a decade, but the guy you've seen play for over a decade who has a track of having 50 goals and having 100 points, that's the guy you'd let go.
Yeah, so you just become what you've been the last few years then, that everyone considered have no depth, you're a one-line team.
But because now you have no money to buy anything. Do we have no depth because everybody was always injured all the time and there was no actual, like, there was the 12 forwards that played, like, the top nine players on the Avalanche for the forwards did not play more than six games together across three seasons?
I want to nip this in the bud here really, really quickly, because the argument here that you are making is if Rantanen signed an 11.7 deal with the Colorado Avalanche, we'd only be missing out on one player on this team.
You'd be missing out on Drury. You'd be missing
No. You'd didn't be missing let me interrupt out on you. Brent Burns let
and
me Malinsky, finish.
And I don't care.
You let me finish. I want to nip this misconception in the bud. That is exactly why. No, it is, because that is exactly why they traded Mika Rantanen, because they offered that to him and he said no.
Okay,
if Mikko Rantanen. No, if not,
you can't say you're going to be deeper. You can't say you're going to be deeper if you're going to overpay Natchez for 11.5. You can't say that you want to be deeper and also overpay in the same sentence.
I can stop talking. Thank you. No, the thing is they offered Mikko Rantanen 11.7. That's the alleged number. He said no, and then he got traded. So that's a non-starter. That is a non-issue here at that point. If that's the conversation that's being started around all of the steps, that's a non-issue because he wanted more. He wanted more than that, and he was unwilling to move that number. It took three teams telling him no before he settled on $12 million. So that has nothing to do with the depth here. I would have loved to have seen Mikko take an 11.7 because that means that the Avalanche still have the opportunity to sign some of that depth. Maybe Brent Burns is off the table. Maybe a Victor Olofsson's off the table. Maybe some of these other deals don't happen, but you're still able to create somewhat of a deep team while also creating or leaving room for that Cale Makar contract to happen. The reality is he was not going to take that. And so
I never said
that
he was
going
to take 11.7. I never said that.
That is exactly what you said.
I never said that. I said you were off by $1,250,000. He wanted 13. You're going to overpay Rantanen $500,000 more than I think everybody who watches the Avalanche day in and day out was. Everybody said 11, or everybody said 10.5, and you overpaid there. So where was the overpay when it came to Mikko Rantanen? Where was that overpay? It was gone because you learned your lesson the last time and you let a 100-point scorer walk. Or not essentially walk. You had to trade him because you were too stubborn to overpay just a little bit. And I
no, it wouldn't have been a little bit. It would have been an outrageous amount. It was 13 the low number.
I think 13. I don't think 14 was ever truly on the table because he's not a Leon Draisaitl. He's not a center. He doesn't play
center. No, but his agency thought he was. And they were hardballing and having horrible communication, which is documented.
Agreed, but 13 million. I'm just saying. I'm not saying he would have taken it. I'm not saying that he would have taken 11.75. I don't even know if he would have taken 13. But my problem is, though, is that you're going to overpay with what everybody considers an overpay of 11.5 million for Martin Natchez, but you weren't going to consider an overpay with the guy who had won a cup with you, who had played 9 seasons for you, who had 100 points over. And then also in the fact that you traded him in the same season where Arturi Lehkonen and Valeri Nichushkin, Jonathan Drouin, Ross Colton, and I'm missing our third line center, Casey Mittelstadt, did not play more than 4 games together throughout that entire 24-25 season. I understand the conversation has always been around the depth of the Avalanche, but you had no idea what kind of depth you even had because everybody was constantly getting injured. And now when you look at the full picture and you see that, oh, hey, maybe if everybody was healthy at the same time, this isn't the one trick pony that you saw all season.
Well, no, because Mittelstadt was a disaster that no one could have predicted.
Agreed.
You saw Miles Wood was a useless forward that lost you games.
That's fine.
You saw Ross Colton go down with injury, which is a point in favor. But the problem was that is like your only third line guy. You needed a 3C and a third line wing to complement him. Mm-hmm. Now you do with Jurian Olafson. And congratulations. Landeskog can look like he's not ready to be a top six player. And you're still rolling without any hesitation. So that's what needed to happen. And also the biggest thing is if Rantanen wanted 12.5, 13, whatever, the Avs can afford to pay him next season and get away with it because of the cap. But because of how the years just unfortunately played out, this season would have been a bust. We have no players. We have no chance of competing on the cup.
And season was a bust, though. The last
season was also a bust, yeah. And contributing it even worse with a worse Mikko Rantanen contract would not have helped things whatsoever. And then on top of that, you have to realize Cale Makar's contract comes in and would have just been like, nope, it's over. We can't pay anyone at all. That's the biggest thing.
You can't honestly sit here and tell me that the Colorado Avalanche would have had a better fate had they not traded for
I don't think you know what you had when you traded Rantanen away. Like I said, 4 of your middle 6 players did not play more than 4 games together. You didn't know what you had. This is my problem.
Which is why you brought in 2 more middle 6 players.
I agree with that. Well, but kind of. I'm just saying. I'm upset with the fact that now that the team is healthy, apart from Kivi Ranta, who's injured, who's on the fourth line, because there's some prospects in the pool now, or there's some prospects who are playing up, and Samuel Girard's out, but we always knew he was going to be out because that dude is built like a twig. I'm just saying, now with the whole team here, you can say, oh, the Avalanche, they have good depth. Well, they never had a problem with depth because the whole team had never been healthy at one point in the season. And yeah, you can say that that's just hockey sometimes, but that's also the thing where it's like you traded Rantanen away when you didn't when you had no idea of what you actually had in a team. Nichushkin and Lehkonen did not play more than 20 games together last season. They're about to eclipse that within the first month.
Yeah, and I mean, there's definitely a big impact, but you look at what it did to the top six, and you still have to reiterate how bad the that was me. You have to realize
Xbox?
How bad the ghost is speaking to you. How bad the actual center depth was. I mean, you had a Parker Kelly playing third line center at some points. Ross Colton is much better as a wing, and you've just maximized the contracts that you have with Casey Mittelstadt, honestly, not looking great at all. Yes, he's in Boston playing a little bit better, but when he plays meaningless hockey, that seems to be his best time. You also saw in those playoffs against the Dallas series that happened the year prior, where the Avs did go up against Dallas with a relatively healthy lineup, and still were not able to get anything done. So what you had was very clearly not working. And I think comparing it to that team, this team is million times better. And it's only going to get better at the trade deadline is my thing. And based off of the cap and the situations that it is to, for years to come, you have no problem filling any other holes in your lineup.
If I see anybody else other than if I see anybody from the Avalanche trade and his name is not Samuel Girard, I'm going to lose my shit.
They're not going to trade Samuel Girard.
I know they won't because it's because our fucking GM is an idiot and Girard is just a terrible defenseman in the playoffs.
As we wind down the episode, want to throw it out to the collective just for any final thoughts. I know we've kind of broken down the what ifs. Overall, final thoughts and grades. If we're on a grading scale, A through F, Grant, without being dramatic, please.
I'm not being dramatic. I'm being realistic.
Real grade here.
C minus.
Okay, that's more generous than I expected from you.
A C minus because that's the pigeonhole you put yourself in. Way to go, McFarland. You successfully ruined a full season of Nathan MacKinnon being a Hart nominee, and you're about to ruin another season by not actually having people who perform in the playoffs. Thank you.
That first point, I would love to bring up in our next podcast. The fact that you don't think Nathan MacKinnon is still a Hart nominee or a Hart contender.
No. You wasted a year of him being a year as a Hart nominee. You also wasted another season of Cale Makar being the Norris Trophy winner. Good job, McFarlane. Way to screw us over like you always do.
Yeah. No, while I disagree with you there, I'll wait to give my grade. Gavin?
I'm going to give it a B. I think that's fine enough. I mean, it's with the caps rising.
The ghost has traveled.
That's going to be the ad break thing. It's just Gavin's Xbox going on.
I mean, you look at how the sausage ended up getting made at the end of the day.
That happened in my work today.
I bet. I had to. I mean, yeah, you got to give what it is to what the situation they were in with the rising cap and everything. Obviously, you prefer it to be a cheaper contract, but at the end of the day, you took care of business. You stopped the conversation and the narrative over it, and you're just continuing forward. I don't think it's not going to affect much this season. Truthfully, it won't affect a lot last season. It's just a good bit of business. Solid B grade for me.
Courtesy call, what do you think?
Well, I was getting ready to get into it. I
know. I just wanted to put the courtesy call in because I think we should every time you get a highlight, I think we should do courtesy call.
Yeah. Oh,
gosh.
Marty Nettles isn't even moderately aged yet. So we're
not even moderately aged. Do you think Marty Nettles wants a courtesy call? Do you think he wants a courtesy call?
I think so.
Do Czech people eat sausage?
I hear they're really a big fan of the hot dog company called Inbred Sausages.
What?
Get it? Sausages? Get it? Hot dog?
Sausage in bread.
Yeah, there you go.
Interesting.
I hate you both. No, Gavin, I'm kind of going along the B territory as well, solely because of the price point and where it came in at. But something that I kind of mentioned in my roundtable for DNVR that will come out with AJ and Bruto's thoughts as well tomorrow, or maybe today as of posting this. I will probably post this Friday morning. It's for me, if the little things that I likely were brought up on the table from Colorado and saying, like, we're going to sign you to this with the expectation that these are the things you can fix. If those are the things he can fix and he looks like the kind of player we all know he is capable of being, this contract looks gorgeous to me, especially considering the cap is going up here by a lot. It's not just little amounts of money. It is going up by a lot here in the next couple years. And that therein lies the opportunity to re-sign guys to contracts that they are maybe more deserving of. You look at a Victor Olofsson, who might be worth some money depending on how he performs in the rest of the season. You look at a Jack Drury, who's going to be an RFA, who's going to want to command a lot of money given what he's been able to do. You look at maybe a Sam Molinsky, who might want to stay with the organization depending on, you know, his underlying numbers and how great they've looked. And then obviously, you know, Cale Makar, Sam Girard, Arturi Lehkonen's coming up here in the next 2 years. Like, there are a lot of guys coming off the books here soon. Like, guys who have kind of assimilated themselves into this Avalanche core, who have made themselves big names for different reasons and different roles on this team that you want to get re-signed. And with the amount of, with the cap going up, it might look a lot more team friendly than what a deal a year or two down the road for a Martin Natchez might have looked like. I think if they had waited a couple months, this could be vastly more expensive than what we're seeing currently. But 11.5,
or vastly cheaper, because we all know he's a ghost in December and January. If you've watched Martin Natchez at all over his career.
We'll see.
The bottom line here for me, it's a great deal. I really like this deal, solely because of the fit here in Colorado. He's shown that this system of hockey suits the way that he likes to play. And if he can thrive in that, this deal, again, 2-3 years down the road is going to look amazing if he can live up to those expectations.
Like he has lived up to the expectations of the Carolina Hurricanes. No wonder they wanted to get rid of him.
I mean, I don't think they have any expectations at all. And neither of their players have.
Final thoughts, you guys, before we wind this thing down.
Keep on swimming. Keep on with the season. I want to see it. I don't feel any differently about it. You look at the AAV. I was happy I got something else to talk about. I was killed my ideas to make a Martin Natchez video about speculations and all that, but that's all right. Just scratch that one.
Yep. Grant, final thoughts?
Well, I guess we're losing in April again. We have another player who can't perform in the playoffs. Pessimist. I mean, I don't know.
You can't are perform such the, a pessimist.
Can't be a difference maker in the playoffs for an $11.5 million player. Last I saw when Kyle Connor signed his $12 million deal, last I saw Kyle Connor actually scored with or assisted on the game-tying goal with 0.3 seconds left on the clock for Winnipeg.
Well, then I think sucks in the playoffs.
Then I think proceeded to win in game 7 in overtime against the Blues, if I remember correctly. I'm just saying
we paid the 8th wild card team. Congratulations.
We paid only $500,000 less, you know, than a guy who scored 50 goals or, you know, a guy who got over 100 points. So, you know, just saying.
I think the final thought to wrap all of this up is there's a lot of expectations here, and to earn this contract, Marty Natchez has a lot of them to live up to. That's where we're going to cap it off here for this edition of the episode and of the podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this emergency podcast episode, and we will see you next week for the 15th episode and edition of the Avalanche Warning. See ya.